This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
One of our favorite things to do in the summertime is to check in with Scott Stripling on what's happening in archaeology in Israel with his dig and other archaeological issues. Scott is the provost at the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, the president of the Near East Archaeological Society, and director of excavations for Associates for Biblical Research at Tel Shiloh. One thing that's happened since a year ago was this Gaza war, which still continues. There were a number of excavations that didn't make it into the field, I think, because of that. What kind of impact did that have at Tel Shiloh, Scott?
It certainly impacted us also. We were about one-third the number that we had in 2023. So 2023, I had 225 registered volunteers. I had 75 this year. Most of them stayed for most of the time, and that helped. And then we had some local folks too. We did not experience any security issues, but we did add some extra protocols and did our due diligence. But thank God we were okay. It's difficult because we're dealing with our Israeli partners. Everyone I know has been impacted, very personally through the loss of someone very close to them, a son, a father, this type of a thing. You're trying to do your work, but really more important than the work are these interpersonal relationships. Sort of the work, I think, is therapeutic for them and for us.
Yeah. I also have ministry colleagues who are working in Israel and continue to hear from them with prayer requests and things like that. In terms of what you were able to accomplish then, maybe not quite as much as previous years with a smaller team.
We have the three primary areas that are going to be our focus and probably for four more seasons to finish up our work at Shiloh. That's the monumental building, which we think is a good candidate for the biblical tabernacle, the gate complex, and then the Favisa, or the sacred deposits. We're going deeper in those three areas, and we did make significant progress in all three of them.
Well, let's talk about those. I know last year when we talked about the tabernacle building, you had found three corners and the doorway, and we're hoping to find the fourth corner this excavation season.
That's what we were hoping. We're still hoping. We went deep in a couple of squares in our area K, trying to locate that southern wall. We just didn't quite get there. We didn't have the manpower this season. So I think we're right at the cusp of identifying that. One of the principles that I always teach my students is we go from the known to the unknown. And it turns out I should have followed my own practice. We know where the wall is and we know where it's going. And so we're going to sort of back up this year and follow from the known to the unknown and let it lead us to that fourth quarter.
So just follow the wall, basically, to where it goes.
That's right. I thought I could do the math and that it would lead me to the fourth quarter, but so far I don't have it. So I'm going to back up and practice what I preach.
Sometimes it doesn't pay to get ahead of yourself.
Right.
Is there any other new understanding about this building that was achieved this year?
Well, Tim Lopez has done such a good job of helping supervise this building. And he's, in fact, about to start his PhD in Israel at Ariel University. And his dissertation will be on this building. Tim and I worked really closely on this. We've reached ground level in a couple of places, and we have the foundation trenches now, and we can concretely date it to the end of the Late Bronze Age. I was theorizing that last year, but we're confident of that this year based on radiocarbon dates, based on luminescence dates, and based on our ceramic dates.
Another area you've identified is the gate. Last year, we talked about the pillars that have been found in the gate area, possibly a roof. What's new in the gate area?
Something really exciting. But before I tell you, let me back up to the building for a second. We did find another pomegranate in the monumental building this year in the area that we've identified as the possible Holy of Holies. This one is made of faience. We got it through wet sifting. And so very small faience pomegranate. That's the third one so far from this building. Interesting that we're not finding them anywhere else on the site, only right there. And that's sort of matches what you would expect because the Bible's talking about that's a motif of the tabernacle.
Is a small pomegranate something that someone would have worn as a decoration?
When we're reading the Old Testament text, the priests had bells and pomegranates on the hem of their garments. And it's a little unclear if the pomegranates were woven or if they were hanging. Because like the bells, we assume were hanging. And these all have attachments where they could hang as well, possibly from a colt stand, but also possibly from a garment. Later, of course, you had 200 pomegranates adorning Solomon's temple. So whether these were hanging from priestly robes or they were just accoutrements of the tabernacle is not yet clear to me, but it's definitely a motif of the tabernacle.
Well, let's switch to the gate then. What was found there?
Well, the pillars are now fully exposed, and we now know that they survived to the original height, which is very shocking to us. There's a niche in the fortification wall. We put a beam into that niche, and it goes right across the top of the pillars. And boy, we just couldn't believe it when we saw that. It's almost like when the Galilee boat actually floated, we were like, you got to be, how did these massive pillars survive to their original height? And then around the pillars, we were in for another big surprise because we found over 100 paving stones that are geometric paving stones from the late Bronze Age, some of them still in situ. We always get excited when we get a sealed locus. We have something that's in situ. These pavers, Gordon, are triangle shapes, hexagonal shapes, quadrangular shapes. In other words, they're all geometric, like we would think of Second Temple period stones, like the Opus Sectile type stones. And of course, Frankie is part of my team.
Frankie Snyder.
And, she just went crazy when we started finding these. No one has ever even heard of such a thing in the late Bronze Age context. And to have them in situ is just phenomenal.
So that's 1,200 years roughly earlier than the stones that Frankie Snyder was working on from the temple in Jerusalem.
That's right. Of course, she cracked the code, and we think we know now what those Herodian floors looked like. Since we have some of these in situ, it should not be as hard to crack this code. This is why I think it's important. We always have to hold our assumptions loosely. We assumed that there wasn't such a thing in the late Bronze Age, but now we know that there was. Just like we assumed there were no clay roof tiles, or most people did, until the second century, even though I was finding them in excavations, and I knew that there were. And then the Givati parking lot this last year blew that theory out of the water. This happens all the time. So when we have these theories, I think it's important we remember that they're working theories.
For those who just joined us, we're talking with Scott Stripling, the Director of Excavations for Associates for Biblical Research at Tel Shiloh. That was one of the excavations that did occur this past summer. You were talking about the pillars being exposed. Does that mean they were vertical and not fallen over like a lot of pillars?
Vertical, completely, all the way to the top. Not a single stone in any one of the three pillars has fallen.
Wow.
And that's just maybe because they're so large, they survived better, or maybe they were intentionally buried. It's hard to say, but there they are. And boy, are we happy about it.
So how tall are they?
The bedrock undulates, so it drops at some point. So they're not all uniform. The highest one is surviving to about almost 2 meters in height.
Wow. For people who go to Tel Shiloh, like my colleague John Delancey, on a regular basis, that's something to see now that wasn't there before.
Well, yeah. In fact, John worked with us this summer. I think he was part of the crew that I had bring the beam down. And when we set it in, and we were all just shocked when the beam fit perfectly and the pillars had survived to their original height.
Is the beam still there?
No, I took it out temporarily because it wasn't my beam. I borrowed it. But we will certainly get one. And with that, now we know from floor to ceiling, because we've got in-situ flooring and we know where the ceiling was. And so we've got more work to do in that area. We have found our first human remains at Shiloh, also in the gate area of all places. And it's a human skull. So we have tons of animal remains, but no human remains until this season. And this is very interesting because, of course, the Bible says that Eli died in the gate at Shiloh, and EA, Elamarna 288, which I'm, along with Clyde Billington, he and I have finished an article, actually, that will be included in a new Festschrift in honor of Edwin Yamauchi. I'm dealing in this article with Elamarna 288, And two leaders also die in the gate at Silu, which we believe is biblical Shiloh, and that's the case that we make. So three records of people dying in the gate at Shiloh, and now we have a human skull. Super interesting.
An interesting connection with both the Bible and the Amarna tablets. Well, there's one other area that you identified as an area of focus, the Favisa, which is where things were dumped. One of the most fascinating places for archaeologists to excavate is a dump.
We love garbage, Gordon. I mean, I can talk trash with the best of them. This is not just any garbage, of course. You know, we have the garbage dump in Jerusalem, which was important because it helped us stratigraphically date. But this is sacred garbage. This is a sacred dump. Bones, pottery, and special objects from the sacrificial system. Now, we have about 10,000 bones so far. And we have a zooarch, Dr. Haskell Greenfield, that we've added to our staff so that we can study every bone. We know what animal it is and any pathologies and male or female and right side, left side, and all of these types of things. They're kosher bones. They are disproportionately from the right side of the animal as per Leviticus 7. Mixed in with this is a lot of pottery from the late Bronze Age II period. Beautiful, restorable vessels. We have also found now a total of 7 gold pieces within this favisa. Gold is very rare in the ancient world. Most archaeologists never find gold in their excavations. So this now qualifies as a hoard. Beautiful gold pieces. And here's the teaser. This will be on the cover of a future volume, I'm sure. One of them has a human face on it engraved.
What's the dating for these gold pieces?
Late Bronze Age also, because the pottery and the bones are LB, and the parallels, incidentally, that we have for these pendants and the face and so forth are all LB also. So we're dating from about 1400 down to, say, 1075, a period of about 225 years that this favisa was in use.
You said pendants, gold pieces, typically you think of coins, but coinage wasn't invented at this time. So these were articles that people wore.
That's right. Most of them have clasps, and that's why I'm calling them pendants. One is like spoon-shaped. A couple of them are star-shaped. So these are things that people have that are of great value in the sacrificial process. I think they're bringing an animal. They're bringing a libation, a drink offering, and that's why we've got the pottery that accompanies it. Dozens of goblets and chalices just this season, which are cultic in nature. So we have the animal bones, we have the vessel for the drink offering, and then the thing of great value, the gold piece.
Devotion to God, expressed through sacrificial offerings, recovered 3,000 years later at Tel Shiloh, the center of Israelite worship before the temple was built in Jerusalem. We will continue our conversation with Scott Stripling on this year's excavations at Tel Shiloh in our next program. Scott Stripling is provost of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, president of the Near East Archaeological Society, and director of excavations for Associates for Biblical Research at Tel Shiloh. To find out a lot more about what's going on in biblical archaeology, check out our website at radioscribe.com. There you'll find breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority, information on the Biblical Archaeology News Magazine artifacts, and other resources. That's radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.